Welcome back to episode 121 of Chess Journey, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journey, we love to look at the highs and glories of raid and gain, but we also dive into the plateaus and the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Scott D4B6, Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and our king level supporter, Ian Samples. If you're interested in Noel Studer's awesome next level training program, you can use the code in the show notes below to support the show. You win, I win, we all win. And as I was prepping for today's interview, I realized that Chess Journeys has had over 250,000 listens. So I want to do a big shout out to my mom. Thanks for listening so much. Really appreciate it. All right. So today I'm going to bring back a special guest. We have Ben Johnson. He's the host of the greatest chess podcast, Perpetual Chess. He is a master. He's a two-time guest of this podcast. And now he is an acclaimed author of the new book, Perpetual Chess Improvement. Ben, welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
Well, it's for sure a top 10 chess podcast, I'll say, Kevin. And yes, I did play a game of chess today. First of all, good to be back. And yeah, as we were discussing, today was one of those days where, like, you know, things feel a little heavy. And often it's like, I'll feel that way. And then I'll realize, oh, right, I'm tired. You know, that's why everything seems dour. But I haven't been playing a ton of Blitz lately. But on days like that, my go-tos are music and then Blitz. There's something magical about just if you feel like some sort of malaise and you just play chess, you know, it gives you a chance to get angry about something else. So it's a wonderful escape.
Okay, very nice. I played one Blitz game today also, and I just hung a bishop.
I lost as well, but what can you do?
Yeah, I didn't get a bishop trapped, just to be clear. I just put it in front of their bishop, and then they took it, and I hit the resign button. It was a great game.
It was a great game.
Well, it's been about a year since you've been on Chess Journeys, and I'm curious, how much chess have you gotten a chance to play in the last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to even place the timeline of, like, exactly what was going on last time we talked. Mm-hmm. But I guess in terms of my chess game, the major development, I mentioned this in a recent Perpetual Chess pod with Christopher Chabri, is I finally found a local club I can play at. It's not super local. It's a 35 to 40 minute drive, Chaturanga Chess Club in Pennsylvania. I hadn't even mapped it. I knew it existed. I hadn't even mapped it just because it's like, oh, it's in a different state. You know, how close can it be? But I found out it's only a 35 to 40 minute drive. So now I'm in my second consecutive, like, Wednesday night weekly tournament. So it's keeping, I'm Kevin, my motivation has been flagging other than that, but I sort of feel like I'm at least keeping the car running. I'm playing once a week. I take a look at those games and my results have actually been decent, but it's one of the, you know, I've long ago figured out, both from my own experiences and from interviewing so many people, that chess is a game of energy and entropy. And I do feel like it's sort of an entropatic, I don't know, is there an adjective there somewhere? An entropatic, whatever, stage for me, but I'm at least managing to play, and actually my results have been okay. So I'm hoping to wake up one day fired up, but it hasn't happened recently.
Okay, that's cool. At this local club, when you walk in, are you like the Levy Rosman? Like, do you get swarmed? Like, oh my goodness, it's the Ben Johnson.
I am very far from Levy Rosman. So it's like a funny dichotomy. And it's a very grounding thing because, like, you know, 85% of the people, I mean, have, you know, no idea. I mean, nor should they, but they don't know who I am, except one of the founders of the club. Shout out to Stan Ward, if he happens to hear this. You know, as I've said many times, the sort of proprietors and tournament directors at local clubs are such unsung heroes in the chess world. So he's been a longtime listener to the pod, and we've exchanged emails over the years. So he's always, like, kind of making a big deal of my presence and embarrassing me, and everyone else is just kind of like, whatever, you know, shut up about this dude. So it's like I said, it's a strange dichotomy. Yeah. And I'm in their camp.
Okay. So that's interesting, because I've had a similar experience where no one knows who I am, but I also have a podcast that no one listens to, right? So, like, I wasn't sure if, like, you having such a well-known podcast, you know, people would know who you were.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things in these local clubs, and shout out if anyone from Chaturanga is listening, but I really feel like it gets me out of the sort of online chess echo chamber. Like, they're just living their lives and they show up, you know, they're not a ton, you know, not very online, not, you know, not listening to Perpetual Chess or Chess Journeys or like following, you know, I played a game recently and my opponent, player around my rating, had a really disheartening blunder at the end of the game. So I got lucky and won. And he was saying, oh, I haven't had a blunder like that for a year. And I started trying to tell him about, you know, Vidit Gujarati just had this epic comeback in the Grand Swiss, where he had like, you know, a 1200 level blunder in the first round. And I was saying, you know, you should have seen what this guy did. He was in the strongest tournament of the year. He blundered and in like, you know, awful fashion. And then he went on to win the strongest tournament of the year and have like a career altering event. And the guy's just like, you know, Vidit who? So that was just like a reminder of the other people probably for the better are not following chess quite as closely.
Yeah. He's like, is he at this club? I've
never. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And are there other people around your rating? I know like when I interviewed Nate, he said he really struggled because his rating was so high that when he would go to like a local club to play, he was just so far above everyone. You know, it was hard for him to even find a competitive game.
Yeah. Nate and his first world problems. Yeah. I'm lucky that I am one of the higher rated players. You know, I seem to be slotting in as like the second seed at most tournaments, but I won the first tournament I played. I actually didn't end up playing the top seed. And yeah, so it's not like, you know, in order to get better, as I quote Ben Feingold in my book, I don't know if you know, I wrote a book, Kevin.
I heard of it. Yeah.
You know, you want to play players stronger than you. So there's only one player higher rated, but you can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And honestly, I was getting beat up a little bit in all this weekend Swisses. So it's a little gratifying to be able to just show up and feel like I can hold my own. Especially like I said, because I haven't been hitting the books particularly hard lately.
Well, it also sounds like you get to add to your list of achievements then club champion, or at least
that's right. Yeah.
Monthly yeah. Club champion.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're in the middle of our actual like year long club championship. And I'm actually 2.5 out of 3, which is kind of remarkable for me, but the master who never plays because our club isn't quite strong enough for him, he plays in the club championship, you know, so he's like lurking out there. Like, if you keep winning, you're going to have to run into me. So
nice. Got to start that prep soon.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see what happens when I play the master. All right. Well, that's really exciting, Ben. I know for myself, the weekly events have really kept me going when I have terrible big weekenders and I'm like, should I ever play chess again? Well, 3 days later, I have a game and I get to kind of rebound. So it's exciting having the weekly thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, and I know we should get to the book, but I have noticed it's also sapping my motivation to play in these weekenders because I feel like it's basically enough, you know?
Yeah. I was supposed to play in a big one recently and I said, you know what? I don't have the energy right now. My energy is really low. I'm not going to.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it's better than forcing yourself, you know, we can't forget it's a hobby. Wow. What is that beautiful sight?
Yeah. So I'm now holding the fastest chess book I've ever read, Perpetual Chess Improvement by Ben Johnson. I've had authors on the show who have written books, and I haven't had a chance to read them all. But this one, it just reads so smoothly. I read it in its entirety before bringing you on. So let's break this book down. And I guess my first question is, how would you summarize this book if you had 2 sentences? Like, you just meet someone on the street. You're like, I wrote a new book. It's about this.
I would say it is the distillation of 500 hours of chess talk into a 6-hour read of chess improvement talk, I should say. Although that's slightly disingenuous because a lot of the talk on the Perpetual Chess is not chess improvement. But
gotcha. Yeah. Okay. All right. I like that summary. I was reading a review today and the reviewer described the book as this: it won't make you better at chess, but it is fantastic. Do you agree or disagree? Do you think it will make you better at chess?
No, I don't. I'm gratified to hear that review. I don't think it'll make you better at chess. But like you said, hopefully it's a, It's a relatively quick read and provocative at times. You may not agree with all of the my takes, and certainly not all of the quoted takes, but I think it will give you at least a few good ideas of like different angles to pursue chess from. And there's some fun stories in it too.
And my take is that that probably will in the end make you better at chess, but we'll get to that in a bit. So I guess the next question is why write a book, Ben? You've got the successful podcast. I can't imagine it's because you think it's going to make you $1 million. We're not really in that book world. So why write a book?
Yeah, I wrestled with that question for a long time, but I have always enjoyed writing. And it give me an opportunity to really figure out what I think. You know, I mean, I kind of decided to structure the book topic by topic, in terms of like different chess improvement topics. Is speed chess good for your chess? Are endgame studies good for your chess? Do we still need to study the classics? I know these questions come up on Chess Journeys as well, Kevin. Yeah. So, you know, I try to be relatively neutral on perpetual chess, and it's also sort of my nature. I mean, I have so much respect, like, you know, all the like trainers and grandmasters I interview, I feel like are more accomplished than me. And the improvers I interview are more accomplished at improving. So it's taken some getting used to for me to actually interject my opinion. But I did feel like it would be a healthy exercise to sort of wrestle all these topics to the ground. And so far, I'm glad I did it. Well, you know, as the reviews continue to come in, we'll see if I still feel that way. But so far, so good.
Nice. Did you have imposter syndrome at all while you were writing this? Like, am I really good enough to write this? I mean, you're a master, so you can like lean on that title. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, yeah, I did for sure. And I showed an early draft of a chapter to the aforementioned Nate Solon. And it was one of these things where I basically said, this is what some people think. This is what other people think, the end, in the chapter. And Nate was like, listen, man, you gotta tell us what you think. And I was like, well, I guess if Nate wants to know what I think, I guess I do have to include it. So I did find that helpful. But yeah, the imposter syndrome is definitely real.
Yeah, it's a hard one to shake. And it feels like the farther you go down the ratings ladder, like I have a dream of a book I'd like to write. I've got like several projects. And then every time I go to start writing, I'm like, who cares what I think about chess improvement? I'm getting worse at chess if you look at my rating. So yeah, that's definitely a tough one. Who do you think is the main audience of this book? Or who'd you have in mind when you're writing it?
Well, shout out to Omar if you're listening.
Oh, okay.
So Chess Von Doom, the online community knows him well. Very, very entertaining and earnest. Relatively new chess improver. So I want it to be readable for, you know, chess trainers at my level and above, the 2200 to IM level. I don't want them to be suffering too much with facts and stories they may have heard before somewhere along the lines. But I also wanted people who sort of, you know, don't have a ton of tournament experience, but sort of know the lay of the land. I wanted them to be able to read it and have some good ideas of like further avenues to pursue. So the reason I mentioned Omar is as I was rereading it at some points, I would try to put myself in his shoes because I view Omar as like relatively new chess enthusiast, but very earnest and curious and hardworking. And I felt like if I can pitch it so that someone like him would be able to understand it, then I'm doing my job.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I feel like this is one of the books that covers the widest rating range I've seen because it's covering so many topics and it's doing it. I don't know, the way I sort of describe it is like at like breadth over depth.
Yeah.
That it allows someone to access it at a lower level, and then still higher level people are getting maybe ideas that they hadn't heard from well-known trainers, or maybe other suggestions for resources to go deeper into a topic. So I agree. I felt like it covered a pretty wide range.
Yeah. I mean, you always run the risk of trying to serve too many masters, but hopefully people aren't yawning too frequently.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any room for yawning, man. This book moves. This book moves more than most novels I've read.
So. Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. It's a mover. All right, let's talk about the process for a bit, because I'm curious about, like, I haven't gotten to talk to too many authors about their process. So, like, how long did it take you to write this thing?
I mean, I definitely started in 2021. I don't remember exactly when. So 1.5 to 2 years is a reasonable assumption. But there were periods where I worked on it reasonably hard and then periods where I would just kind of forget about it for a week at a time. But it's been germinating for a long time.
Okay. And Cameron from Twitter is wondering, what was your favorite part of the process?
Yeah, I mean, you buried the lead. That's Cameron Heidi, the legend herself, right?
yeah.
So oh, yeah, she was a adult improver guest.
Quoted in the book.
Yeah, quoted in the book, if you're not aware, Cameron. Yeah, and has made incredible improvement herself and built a great following on her YouTube channel. And I know that Cameron, as I discussed when I interviewed her, she is an avid writer as well. So I think she might not be surprised to hear me say that I much prefer like editing and rewording things to actually putting the words on the page. So that's the most enjoyable part for me. But the thing is, I could just do that forever. You know, I could just sit on one draft and just tinker with it, you know, for the rest of my life. And that doesn't really, you know, not the best use of my time. No one would ever see it. So luckily, I eventually had a deadline where I had to curb that impulse. And unfortunately, despite all my edits, you know, a few typos got in, like stuff like that. You know, it's like, it's still frustrating when stuff like that happens. But I very much enjoy, and I think as Cameron and I think touched on in our interview, like I think there's something in the chess player mindset where often whatever it is that you enjoy about like arranging pieces and looking at, you know, playing through a game, I think there might be hitting some of the same pleasure centers of the brain when you like try to reword things. At least that's my amateur take.
Interesting. Because I think I'm the exact opposite of you. Like when I write, I love writing a draft and I hate editing. I find it to be so tedious.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've definitely heard people say that there's like those two distinct personality types. Yeah. But there goes my theory that chess players are the tinkerers.
Well, maybe that's why I blunder too much, because I'm not as detail oriented and I would rather just move on to the next move. I don't know. Okay. Which parts of the book do you feel like came out the best?
I liked my chapter chronicling Levy's pursuit of the Grandmaster title. It's called like Status in Chess. It has a longer title than that, but we ended up changing the title, so I actually have to double check what it is right now. But basically, Status and Titles, Title Envy, Deflating Rating, and Tales of Inspiration.
I like that. Title Envy. That's good.
Yeah. So it's just because I just feel like it's so central to a chess player's identity. And it seems like everyone goes through it. And I felt like Levy is such a great example of that, because he has everything, but he was still tormented by his lack of GM title. And, you know, obviously being a very public person, we could all sort of watch as he tried to get that title and identify with his struggles. But within that chapter, I mean, Levy obviously ended up deciding not to pursue the GM title, at least for the time being. But I mean, I also tell the stories of people like Kari Christensen, who became an IM in his 50s, and Kevin Gowei Meng, who, you know, had that amazing rise to the Grandmaster title, 10 plus year journey. So yeah, I have fun telling people stories for sure, and like trying to sort of draw parallels that all of us can identify with.
Yeah, that the section talking to the 54-year-old IM was my favorite, because I just recently hit 50, I was like, so I've got 4 more years to hit IM?
Right.
All right, like we've got a whole new lease on life here. Maybe it's possible.
Yeah, he's Kari is quite inspiring.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was even thinking about you today. I was talking to a friend and I was like, yeah, I'm interviewing this author for my podcast today. He's a master. And the person was like, oh, wow. So he's like really amazing at chess. And I was like, it's funny you say that, because 20 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, he's basically a god. But now I'm like, I don't know, people would consider him not that good.
You know, exactly.
Like, even GMs were like, just a regular GM, not a super GM.
Right. I feel that way too. And sometimes I feel like I have to tell people, like, you don't understand, when I made master, it was pretty good, you know, and now I don't necessarily feel that way, but such is life. Time stops for no one.
Very strange. And I actually, when I was looking you up to that, I decided to look at your rating. Do you know what percentage you are, what percentile you are in the US rating?
I mean, I know, I would guess 97, 98.
Yeah, okay, you're 98%. So okay. You're very good, let's be clear.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, you just have to grapple with almost like of those other two percentile, like they're almost all online, you know? Yep, so, yep, exactly. and they're all creating chess content. So uh-huh. It's not really true, but it feels that way sometimes.
It does. It's such a different world than it was, you know, 20 years ago. It's very fascinating. Also, there's a lot of Ben Johnsons. You're better than all of them. And I'm better than most of them. I was like, wow, look at this.
That's good to know. Yeah. I wonder, but there's gotta be, I wonder if I'm even a top 10 Johnson. There's gotta be some.
Ooh. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't check all Johnsons. That would have taken me all day. There's a lot of Johnsons.
We got to get Todd Bryan on that. Yeah, that's a big data project.
That really is. I'm really curious about this question that Slow Joe on Twitter asked, which is, did you have a word count at all? And did that cause you to cut things that now you're sort of reflecting back on and like, ah, that would have been such a cool thing to add to the book. And maybe it's going to go in some later project.
Yeah. I think he gave me too much credit as if I had like a lot of excess thoughts beyond what went in the book. Mm-hmm. I did have a page count of roughly 200, which I did exceed a little bit, but, New in Chess was fine with it. They didn't, they never said like a bunch of stuff has to go. So I was, lucky in that regard.
Okay. That's interesting to me because 200 seems kind of low for a book overall, but I guess for chess books, that does seem like about a normal range.
I also just feel like they're figuring out, you know, obviously everyone everywhere is talking about sort of the shortening of attention spans. Yeah. So while it may be that historically that would be on the short side for a chess book, I think they're just recognizing that that's the way the wind is blowing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Rich Burgess on Patreon is wondering, which parts of the book or the process would you do different if you had to do it over again?
That's a good one. Let me think for a minute. I mean, I would have been more disciplined earlier. I would have allowed more time for proofreading towards the end. Yeah, I guess those are the main two things. Because towards the end, I got pretty regimented. And then obviously, as you get closer to the deadline, it becomes a bit frantic. So, yeah. I mean, that's like when I was in college, that's kind of how I operated. So, I don't know, maybe a leopard can't change its spots. But in theory, at least, I would be like, you know, slow and steady the whole way through.
Yeah, I feel like that's how most writing projects are. My dissertation, I had like no chapter submitted. And I told my advisor, I'm graduating at the end of summer, which was in like 4 months. And he's like, that's literally impossible. And I was like, just you wait and see.
Right.
I'm out of here. And I made it.
Nice. What's up now?
Was the work amazing? No, it could have been better. I can be honest. It could have been better. It was a little bit of a time crunch. Did you enlist anyone in your orbit to help you out as the time crunch got closer? Like, was your wife like, hey, I'm sick of reading your stuff. I can't do this anymore. Like, how'd that work?
I mean, the acknowledgments are quite lengthy. So I foisted chapters on various people. Often it would be someone like who I thought might have a particular expertise about a given topic. And then when I was just doing like general editing before it went to print, my friend Mike Klein helped me out and looked at some chess diagrams. I said, you know, I couldn't make him read the whole book like in a day or two. I mean, he acted like he might have been willing, but I was like, if you just look at the chest, you know, that'll be helpful. So, there were a lot of people. Benjamin Porto helped me with the chapter on mindfulness. Todd Bryant helped me with the chapter on Chessable. Nate Solon, the aforementioned. Which chapter did Nate? I think I sent him the tactics chapter, which is funny because I also sent that to Wojciech Miranda, who gave me both some feedback and some quotes. So yeah, I mean, I probably showed, you know, 10 chapters to various people along the way.
That's remarkable. You also mentioned my daughter's favorite chess personality, the Fun Master himself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mike and I go way back. So, but yeah, it's funny to see him become this star among all the kiddies.
Yeah, I will say this. Every week my daughter's like, are you going to interview the Fun Master this week? And I was like, no, not this week. Sorry.
I can get him for you if you want.
Yeah, we'll have to do that sometime. Okay. And maybe I'll have her interview him. That would be a real nice twist. All right. I've got a few questions about your chess and your book. And my first one is like, did the writing take away most of your chess time? Like, especially in the mad scramble, where you're just like, chess, I don't have time. I have to write. Are you able to find a way to blend these?
It definitely took away some time. So again, I've been in a bit of a lull lately. So I've just playing these tournaments and not much else. But before that, I was making a concerted effort to play Title Tuesday every Tuesday. And that fell by the wayside for sure during the more hectic periods of the book. And I'm sure I skipped a tournament or two. So yeah, it definitely made me miss some chess sessions.
Okay. I've also been missing Title Tuesdays. I mean, I try to enroll, they just won't let me.
But now they have the Untitled Tuesdays, right?
I've played in some. They're pretty fun. They're pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the one I played in recently, the person who won was like 2600 blitz. I was like, what is happening here? How are you untitled?
Wow.
It was crazy. All right. Did any of the information in the book surprise you? And did you like rediscover any things you'd sort of forgotten about chess improvement? Anything have a big impact on you?
I can't think of anything off the bat that made me like change my habits. But I mean, for the chapter that I wrote about deliberate practice, which was Hans Schutz actually his idea, and he's another person who he proofread my chapter about chess checklists and added some color to it. He had suggested a chapter about deliberate practice, and that actually sent me down a whole rabbit hole because I felt like, I suppose I should actually know what I'm talking about. So I had to like go back and read the original paper that Anders Ericsson and his colleagues wrote and read some of the follow-up research. So that was fun to learn about, and I definitely feel more informed on sort of the science of learning than I would have without that. I mean, and that definitely, like some of the reading I did, as well as like Dr. Andrew Huberman has a couple podcasts on like air quotes triggering neuroplasticity. I think it's like episode 6 and 7 of his podcast, if anyone wants to go and listen. But he talks about the importance of sort of physical motions in order to trigger memories, particularly for older adults. So that got me thinking both about sort of why OTB seems to be more helpful for improvement. I mean, among other reasons, but also like I in some interviews in Perpetual Chess, where we've sort of bandied about whether it's better to study chess on a physical set or just use a digital ebook reader or whatever it may be. I previously had been on the fence. Now I'm firmly on it is better to use a physical chess set, especially if you're a tournament player. But even if you're not, I think it probably helps with memory. Now, does that mean that I'm getting out the chess set all the time? Not recently, but again, the next time that I'm ready to make a push, I'll definitely be incorporating. And my kids, you know, I used to always blame it on my kids because there was like chaos in the house. Yeah. They're a little older now. So, I mean, I actually like it's reasonable to think I could have, you know, 45 minutes a day of peace and quiet and play through a game or something. But like I said, not doing that now, but I definitely would recommend and hope to incorporate it myself at some point.
Nice. Yeah. I've my kids have gotten old enough now where I have a set up in the office, and every like 2 days as part of my regimen, I do a calculation puzzle actually, like, you know, on the set. Usually get it wrong, but you know, just the process of doing the work is
helpful. Yeah, that's great. I mean, not that you get it wrong, but it's great that you do it.
I got it right yesterday, man. It was great.
Bang, what's up now? What book are you still doing, the Hort and Janse?
Yep. Using Hort and Janse. It's I'm getting pretty deep into it.
The
funny thing is, kind of like think like a super GM where they give you points. They give you points in Hort and Janse. But like I've been doing this book for like 2 years, so I don't know how to add up the points. Like my skill is radically different than it was 2 years ago. So I don't think I'm gonna add up the points at the end. I think it's just the process of doing the puzzles is fine. All right. I have a kind of like a grab bag section that I wanted to ask you about, sort of my reflections on the book. I think the biggest reflection I have, and it comes with the question, is I feel like the book is an interesting mix of very surface level discussions to sort of get you started on topics, and then a couple spots where you kind of like dive in deeper. And I'm just wondering, like, how did you decide where you wanted to go deep and when you wanted to kind of stay surface level?
Interesting. So I'm putting you on the spot here, but could I ask you like of an example of each?
Yeah, I'd say especially the Chessable chapter got like very specific, right? You were like, and this is a way to maximize your usage. You should turn on this switch and hit this button. And I was like, wow, that's a great idea. And I actually went in and changed some of my Chessable courses because of that. Let's see, surface level. Let me flip through real quick. A couple of the early chapters were just, they didn't have that much detail in them. Like chapter one, about like playing tournament games. I don't know. I'm not saying there's anything specific that I would have added, but it's only like 4 pages. It has like some surface level thoughts on why you should play tournament games. I'm just curious, like, were there any specific motivations to go deeper into topics? Did you feel like there was more information there or more information missing, or like it was more necessary for a lower level person? Any reflections there?
Well, you definitely like you keyed onto something with the Chessable chapter in particular, because I had a draft of that and I felt like there just wasn't enough there. So I mentioned that Todd Bryant, who I've interviewed as an adult improver, and he's done a lot of innovative research around sort of basically what is possible for an adult chess player to gain in terms of rating for listeners, even if you don't regularly listen to Perpetual Chess. I know that there's some people who might only listen to adult improver interviews, but the Todd Bryant interview in particular, I think your audience would find interesting, Kevin. And Todd has been a programmer for Chessable. He's now, of course, doing it more for sort of the chess.com side of things. So he has particular expertise in how to use it. So when I felt like, I am a Chessable user, as I write in the book, I had a 400, and I know you've had your streak up and downs too. I had a 400 day streak, and then I couldn't get one going. I finally got one going away again that was like over 100 days. And then like 10 days ago, I swear I reviewed my openings the day before, and I log in the next day and it told me my streak is over.
Oh, no.
So anyway, I mean, I have decent knowledge of Chessable, but I mean, good knowledge of Chessable, but I've always felt like Todd's basically a super user. Yes. So he was able to give me a lot of targeted advice that I, like you say, I incorporated as well. So he gets the credit for the level of detail on that chapter. And beyond that, I would say my overall goal was not to go particularly deep on any chapter. I mean, you mentioned the readability of the book. I mean, I was looking at books outside of chess and just trying to see, like, you know, what makes a book, what makes people gravitate to a book. So that's why there's like bullet points and short chapters. It was by design. So that's kind of how that happened.
Gotcha. So that's like a question I want to ask later, but so basically it felt like you intentionally chose to make chapters shorter, more readable, understanding that they wouldn't be quite as deep. Like it feels like a lot of these chapters could be half a book, but then it's not very readable.
Yeah. No, I definitely, as you said, went for breadth over depth.
Gotcha. Okay. I guess I'm curious how you landed on your 4 keys to improvement. Cause as you were listening to them, I was like, yep, that seems good. But then I was like, wait, consistency doesn't make the list. Like for me, that might be like one of the number one, best ways for chess improvement. So how'd you land on the 4 you landed with?
Yeah. I had the chapters basically, and I had sort of them vaguely sorted, but I was trying just sort of looking at them. And this is like way before I turned the book in, you know, while I still had time to work on things. And I was just thinking, which are the most important? And that's kind of how I decided that. I mean, consistency, certain things, like they might be valid, but since I didn't have chapters about them to begin with, I mean, I do have the habits chapter for consistency. But honestly, I mean, a subtext of the book for sure. And as we already discussed in this interview, I mean, I think it's normal to have periods where you're really into chess and periods where you kind of step back. I've certainly noticed that in like interacting with listeners where like, you know, maybe someone will emailed me in 2018 and then I don't hear from them for a couple of years. And then they'll email me again and say like, yeah, I you know, life got in the way for a while, but now I'm back into chess, you know?
Yeah.
And if I weren't doing the podcast, I mean, as we discussed, like that happens with my tournament game anyway, because this is my job, I'm always immersed in chess. But if I had like a non-chess job and my pursuit of chess were waxing and waning as it does from a competitive angle, I would be coming in and out. So I just felt like, you know, you can say that consistency is important, but, you know, when you think about someone like Philemon Thomas, who he's been on your show too, right?
Yeah.
Like he obviously, I love his story. It's one of my favorites, 12-year journey to become an NM after starting chess as an adult. But as Philemon has said, like even him, he'll have periods of burnout and then he'll say, okay, I'm going to step back for a bit. So I think consistency is important when you're in it. And of course, I quote Jakob Boggard in the book where he's talking about even if it's only 5 or 10 minutes a day, like the added effect of, say, 10 minutes, 7 days a week is much greater than if you do 2 hours one day a week, even though you're spending more time with the 2 hour element. So you are right about consistency, but I also like, I just want to give people room for them to take breaks. So it's like a tricky balance.
Yeah. Philemon's journey is fascinating because it's like full immersion and then breaks.
Yeah.
Like 12 hour days in chess and then no chess. And you're like, wow. Okay. I can't do either of those.
Right.
All right. And so basically you said the you landed on these four because they were kind of the ones that were popping up the most and just kind of reflecting on and felt like, yeah, these are the big ones.
And also I just felt like, see, I just disagreed with you about consistency, but I felt like no one would disagree with them. So the four pillars, I'm not sure if we said them. They are play tournament games, review the tournament or serious games if they're online, review the games, solve puzzles, and find a community. I actually already had someone email me and say, well, I became a master basically all on my own. So you're kind of pushing against the idea that you need a community. But even if you do it on your own, you're reading books, you know, you're not like, you're not gathering the knowledge on your own and you need an opponent to play. So, you know, if I wanted to get into like some sort of argument over email, I could. But his point is well taken and he knows more about his journey than I do. But generally I didn't feel like, you know, I'm both sidesing almost every argument within the book. And I didn't feel like you could really both sides those for the most part.
Yeah. And I certainly didn't agree with them. I didn't read any of those and was like, what? This is nonsense. Of course you don't need to play games to get good at chess.
Right.
Yeah. So they were definitely good choices. And I do love that you added community in there. Cause I feel like especially now it can be more tempting almost for people to just like play exclusively online and not interact with anyone. And I my own personal feeling at least is that leads to burnout much faster. Like it's just hard to sustain when you have no one to talk to. Like you made a great point in the book. Like my family, other than my child that plays chess, does not care or really want to hear about my tournament reports.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. My wife especially is like, hey, you just abandoned me with the kids for 3 days. I need you to like take care of the kids, not give me a round by round breakdown of how the event went. I don't care.
Yeah, there was, I can't remember. I've told this story before. I don't think it was on your podcast, Kevin. Stop me if it was. But obviously, usually playing in competitive chess tournaments is going to be, you're going to lose money doing it. But I had one tournament where I won like $600 for like an under 2300 prize or something. Ooh. And when I got back, you know, my wife like, asked how the tournament went. And I was thinking about it and I was like, well, I could go out of my way to tell her that I won $600. And then I was like, but then we might start talking about the finances generally. So I realized like, even though this time, you know, this time it might be a feather in my cap, I'm better off just avoiding the entire topic. Yeah. So that was the road I pursued.
That would be fine. She's like, can we do the math on how much you've won overall? And you're like, ooh, that's a big negative number.
Yeah, no, let's just talk about this tournament.
Yeah. Have you been surprised at all by the reception of the book? I feel like it's been extremely positive. I know Nick Vissel praised it. Online reviews I've seen are almost entirely 5 stars. I haven't seen any negative comments whatsoever. So like, that's not how the internet works, man. Usually it's like, as soon as a bunch of people praise something, then everyone else has to say how bad it is. So are you surprised so far?
Well, it's very early. You know, we're recording this on November 14th, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And the book, Amazon's official release date is tomorrow as we record this. Although certainly some people got their hands on the book early and the digital versions have been out for a week or so now. I mean, I will say, as you alluded to earlier in the interview, I mean, you don't write a book for the money. So for people to tell me that they enjoyed it and got something from it is like an incredibly gratifying feeling. I'm kind of surprised how much it matters to me because, you know, obviously creating content for years now, like, you know, you come to grips with some, you know, some people are going to love what you do. Some people are going to dislike what you do, and most people are going to be totally unaware that you exist. And that's totally fine. But with the book, I do care, you know, it feels more personal. So far I'm quite gratified that people are enjoying it, but I mean, I feel like it's not, you know, the final story is far from told. So hopefully, as more people check it out, they will also find it worthwhile.
Yeah, I hope so. I know it can be, and harsh reviews online can be very painful. I had a person once contact me who wrote a book that was not well liked by people, and the reviews were just really cruel. And he was like, "Can you please go on Amazon and write a nice review for me?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "I don't know if I can do that actually."
Yeah, it's totally understandable. Yeah, it can be rough for sure. Yeah.
I saw you're on like a book tour here. You got to go to the Marshall Chess Club. How's that going? Has that been fun?
That was so much fun. It's a two place tour so far. Let's not get carried away.
That's a tour.
But I mean, going to the Marshall, like that'll sustain me for years. That was amazing. And like, you know, I texted my friend when we were going there before the event started. I texted him, "I'm concerned both at the same time that I'm going to run out of books that I didn't bring enough and that no one will be there." You know, like both ends of the spectrum are very valid concerns. And happy to report that neither one happened, but it was much closer to running out of books. I mean, there were 35, 40 people there. Shout out to Matt from Michigan who came, like someone came. Wow. And it was just so cool to really get to talk to people and put together a little PowerPoint presentation, which is not my strong suit, but I mean the PowerPoint in particular. But I felt like it, you know, one thing you learn when you write a book is when I've interviewed people, I'm always like, how do they remember all these details of their books? But I now realize it's because they reread the stupid thing like 10 times, you know? So I have my talking points down much more than I normally do. So that's helpful.
Did they pull out like the Fisher table for you to sign books at?
I said, no, I was at a Karjak and Carlson table from the 2016 match in New York. So yeah, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had a friend recently who did a book tour in LA. He did a stop and he didn't invite any of his friends. And the store proprietor was very surprised. He was like, "You were supposed to tell everyone you know." And not a lot of people showed.
I was definitely concerned about that, but
yeah, he definitely had that side of it. So it sounds like you had a great time though. All right, I wrote like a little mini review. I'm curious, you mind if I tell you sort of my takeaways
and yeah,
and
please
tell me what you think of them? Let's see. So I wrote here, a chess book to help you learn how to improve at chess without telling you exact steps on how to improve. There aren't that many plans laid out for improvement. There is a chapter on it. Not a lot of definitive statements, but a great summary of advice. I don't know. What do you think of that start?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, I felt like half of it is, the major highlights of what's been said about each of these chess improvement topics. But I also feel like a sort of overarching question for me, at least, that I'm grappling with is like, what role does chess play in your life? So rather than telling someone like, you know, this is the exact plan that you should study, you know, like Chess Dojo and Chess Goals and like any coach can set you pretty straight on those topics. Although Jesse Cry in his YouTube video, he mentioned that I should have at some point said that there's a need for structure within your plan. And I think he's totally right about that. I should have said that. But yeah, I mean, my sort of big picture question is, does come from a slightly philosophical angle, because we, you know, as we, those of us who love chess, I mean, we spend so much time on it and it's impossible not to wonder why at times. So yes, I'm talking about how to approach chess improvement, but I'm also sort of talking about sort of my, you know, my own evolution in terms of trying to put results in the proper perspective and appreciate that it's almost like, I use this analogy in another interview, but like when you join like a local bowling league, you know, it's not really about the bowling. It's like, you know, you have a chance to catch up with your friends and like get out of the house and stuff like that. And I ultimately sort of wanted to impart that even though this book is about chess improvement, that it's just so challenging and so relentless that you need some other sort of raft to hold on to within your pursuit of chess. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I to me, saying there's not a lot of plans for improvement is not even a criticism, right? I think there's a lot of plans out there now for improvement. And then you sort of mentioned that you can choose any of these. I think any book that tries to lay out a plan for improvement, it's tough because everyone's different, right?
So yeah. Okay. And I quote Wojciech Miranda saying exactly that. Like he says, I can't tell you how to divide your chess study time because it's different for every one of my students.
Yeah. Even my own coach struggles with that. It's kind of like I would love for him to be like, this is the definitive answer. And he's like, there isn't a definitive answer. Like,
right.
Keep working on stuff. The stuff you're working on is helping. Keep doing that. And I'm like, okay. All right. All right. Let's see. Some other things that I put on my summary are one of the best books out there for a summary of great advice offered by high quality trainers and chess players. Very accessible and well written. Reads quickly and with low effort. So let's reflect on that. Do you agree with that?
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Thank you. I wanted it to be readable for sure. So
yeah, it sounds like that was one of your goals, right? To be able to read it quickly. It's not a high effort book. You don't need a chess set out in front of you. It's one of these books where I almost regret having read it because I think I would have really enjoyed listening to it in my car.
Right.
It's perfect for that. Just like take in a chapter or two each drive, mull it over, do the next two chapters.
Yeah. Audiobook is still coming. We're hoping for December.
Yeah. I look forward to it. I'm actually the one who read it. Surprise for you. You didn't even know that. Was that weird reading your own book? Is that when you found the typos that were still left?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I found a bunch of typos before turning it into the printer, and obviously New in Chess read it and edited it as well. But yeah, the act of reading it out loud for an audiobook, it was just like, ugh. And it was too late by then to change. So, this is a limited print, the first edition. Knock on wood, there'll be future prints. And I think in the digital editions, whatever typos snuck in, will already be corrected. But yeah, the process of recording the audiobook, part of the reason, like I recorded it, you know, 3 weeks before the book came out. So at the time I thought maybe it'll be out at the same time as the book. I don't know how these things work. I've never done them before, but it's quite challenging reading an audiobook. The poor guy who's producing them, shout out to Joe, who there's zero chance he's listening to a chess podcast, but shout out to Joe, because like I had to restart so many sentences and then he just has to make it sound seamless. Yeah. So that's why I'm hoping for December, but if he takes a little bit longer, I will completely understand because there's a lot of you knows and ahs and ums when we're podcasting to begin with. There's surprisingly, that's not the issue when you're reading an audiobook. It's just properly reading the sentence is the issue.
Reading aloud can be challenging.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if this helps you feel better, but I read the whole book. I didn't see any typos. So
oh, thank you. Yeah. Because they're sneaky, you know, because that's how I felt when I read the audiobook. I was like, I've read this so many times. How am I not seeing, you know? So if you read it three more times, you would find them. But anyway, it's not the most important thing.
Okay. My review's almost over. I said, there are tons of important topics covered well at a surface level and often supplying sources for anyone looking to go deeper. And it sounds like that was your intention, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Okay.
Some of my favorite chapters are status and titles. And I already said this, but I love the inspirational story of Corey, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Christensen hitting IM at 54. That's so inspiring. And I also love the chapter against playing against kids. You had a lot of really specific advice, but then I love how you couch it with, by the way, none of this might work. You're still good at chess.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was fun to write as well. But yeah, definitely imposter syndrome for that chapter as well, because those kids are killers.
Yeah, I've had such a weird experience with kids where, like, there's these couple of kids at my club. They're like, they were 10, now they're 11. They went from about 1,000 to 1,800 and still climbing. And I got to play them along the journey, and I was beating them. And my coach was like, well, your opening repertoire is kind of good against kids because it's more positional. And I was like, all right, I can beat like little children at chess on a regular basis. This is great. But then they crossed over some threshold where now they want me every time. And it's become very challenging. And I'm like, oh, they're good at everything. They're no longer impetuous. Like this one kid, the first time we played, he played his entire classical game in 5 minutes. And I was like, I've got to beat him if he does that. And I did. He made a mistake. But now he doesn't do that, Ben.
Right.
Now he takes his time. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, and there's no going back. they only move in one direction, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think my only quibble with the book is that I kind of expected the first four chapters with the pillars to be, like, quite detailed and lengthy. And I think when I was reading it, I was just kind of surprised. I was like, oh, wow. These are really short. But then as you covered a million more topics, I was like, oh, I see why. Like if he did, you know, 25 pages on each of these, that would mean 12 topics would have to get cut, which would be unfortunate because I think they were all important. So the quibble that I have is not really a quibble. I think it's just the nature of the book.
Yeah, I mean, that's valid for sure. But I wanted to write a different book than what's out there on the marketplace, and I didn't want to pretend to be a grandmaster. So stuff like the chapters about tactics and even analyzing your games, like I can certainly give, you know, strong amateur level, decent recommendations for frameworks and how to approach it. But if I'm going deep into, you know, once I'm starting to show a lot of tactical examples and stuff, I just felt like there are people who are really good at that. And I, of course, could get help and make sure. I mean, and obviously I can use engines, like I can make sure at least it's not just wrong. But I just felt like, you know, my experience with the podcast, it gives me the opportunity to quote these people and to synthesize their views. But once we're going deeper into analysis, I felt like it's not suited to my strengths as well. I mean, and there's always more stories I could tell as well. But since the book is primarily about chess improvement, I mean, I would occasionally try to wrap one story around a given topic, but I didn't feel like it needed to be story after story, even if they have been told on the podcast and are maybe tangentially related to a given topic. But your air quotes criticism, whatever you want to call it, quibble, is certainly reasonable.
Yeah, I think it's also wrapped in a compliment, which is it's hard to show that restraint, right? Because you're like writing a book, you know, like, this is my one chance. So I feel like you did do a great job having restraint and sticking to your vision of like breadth over depth.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right. Well, as we wrap up today, I guess the last couple of things I want to ask you are about your next goals. Is this your last big project? Do you have another project on the horizon?
No, I'm working on a chessable course. It doesn't feel, I mean, I haven't, I'm supposed to turn it in January. Ooh. So it's a much faster timeline than this book. It doesn't feel as daunting, but I'm also procrastinating as we discussed. And also, I mean, I've had a fair share of like events and interviews and stuff. So, the launch of this book has also a somewhat valid excuse for why I've not been moving as fast as I want and hope that I'm able to meet my deadline. But it's, you know, kind of exercises different muscles. And, you know, it's pitched towards, I'd say, primarily below 1400-1500. So despite what I was just saying about there being other great teachers qualified to present material, I do feel, I feel like I have a good idea of what I'm doing. And I'm enjoying the process. You know, I'm running a lot of database queries and stuff like that. So it's kind of like a very different muscle. And I'm kind of a words/writer person at heart. So I'm kind of having to curb this impulse to like show some chess puzzle and then wrap 1,000 words around it. Like it's really more supposed to just be some chess puzzles. Yeah. So when it's all said and done, I'll sort of take stock of how I enjoyed each process. But I definitely enjoyed writing. So if people like this and it's like feasible from a time perspective in the future, maybe I would pursue another project.
Okay. So it sounds like your chessable course is like a lifetime opening repertoire for 1400s. Right.
No, yeah, it's tactics based, but it has a twist that I still haven't revealed in public. Ooh. I can tell you when we're not recording, but it's not that exciting either. So listeners, don't lose any sleep. I don't think you will, but
no, let's go the opposite. Lose sleep till January.
Right.
Gotta have this course. It's the must have course of 2024. All right. I guess last thing is, do you have any chess goals? Like, do you have any ratings goals, any goals to study X amount or play X amount of games?
I just want to get my mojo back, Kevin. It just isn't there right now. And I don't know if there's, you know, you probably have as well gotten questions along those lines about like, you know, what to do when your motivation is flagging. I kind of always give the advice that time heals all wounds. I mean, you don't necessarily have to force it. I mean, we're not chess professionals here. So that's sort of the tack I'm taking, but I am hoping that one of these days I'll wake up like ready to get back to work from a chess perspective. But that hasn't happened now. So right now I'm excited that I found this club and I'm going to try not to skip many of their events. I mean, there is some juggling with childcare and my wife's extracurricular interests as well. So may not be able to do them all, but I'm excited to be able to play at least 40 rated games a year without giving up my weekends. And I feel like that's a decent start. And then sooner or later, I hope I'm ready to work hard on my chess again.
Yeah, I really just can't wait till your wife's adult ballerina improver podcast drops.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna be fascinating. Yeah, the mojo thing is tough because for me, like, I've kept the work up, but the ratings, I dropped like 150 rating points this year. And in this tournament, I'm 2.5 out of 3, and people have noticed. Like, they're coming up to me, like, you're getting your form back. And I'm like, whoa, don't jinx this thing. Like, this might all fall apart next week. So,
yeah. And it's tough because you don't want to celebrate the highs too much because then you're setting yourself up for when the lows come back. So,
yeah.
You really want to try to be even-handed throughout, but it's hard. You know, as I say in the book, like we're judged by our results, whether we like it or not. But the reality, Kevin, is we're really not judged. I mean, the people coming up and talking to you are just making conversation. Yep. Like no one really cares how we do in our chess games.
Yeah, there's literally no one in my life that cares what my rating is other than me and sometimes my 8-year-old. But even then, she's just like, it could be 1100. She'd be like, darn, you are so good.
Right.
800 points higher than me.
Yeah.
Like I could lose every game from here to the end of eternity and she would still think I was great. So, yep. Well, Ben, thanks so much for coming on and what a great time for you. The new book is out. Everyone seems to be loving it. I read the whole thing in like 2 weeks, which is not how I am with chess books. And it was the easiest chess book I have ever read. And I felt like I learned a lot and it was really great. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that you took the time to read it and ask such thoughtful questions. And yeah, as I say in the book, I mean, I know like no one has ever finished a chess book that they started. So I wanted to fix that. You know, I want everyone to be able to say, I did finish one book, you know?
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed that you wrapped it up. Like, if it was a real chess book, it would have just ended abruptly. Right, with no conclusion at all.
That's right. Yeah, that is like a hallmark, especially of the older chess books. It's like queen f7, end of book.
Period. Yeah. Over.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Ben, for reflecting on the process and the book. I really appreciate it. I think my listeners will both enjoy this podcast and the book. I think you're going to make millions. I'm just going to say it now, Ben. You know, buy a new home right now. You're going to make millions.
Okay. I'm going to send you something nice if I make millions, Kevin. Okay.
That sounds great. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, everyone out there. Well, I hope this is the week where you read Ben's book and you gain a million rating points. But if it's not, and it's a regular week and you're stuck in a plateau, come back next week. We'll have another guest. We'll give you some more suggestions. And see you next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Take care, everyone. Thanks, Kevin.